Hey, welcome to Late Night at the Movie Emporium. I'm Eli Osman.
And I'm Andrew Ford, and this is part two of our Bad Movie Podcast.
Late night, or
2 a.m.
Late night cinema.
Yeah.
And after some computer glitches and me getting pissed off, I finally killed a hobo on the streets with a tack hammer.
Yeah.
And now I'm back and ready to start.
And ladies and gentlemen, prepare to get... Double fuck by two black studs. Double fuck by two black studs.
Sophie's bar on Fifth Street, A. This woman was trying to impress me or something. She told me she had done it all sexually. She had heard it all, she had seen it all, and she had done it all sexually. She said she was jaded, so I asked her if she had ever been double fucked by two black studs, and she didn't tell me. She just got up and left, so I figured she probably hadn't.
Hey,
ladies and gentlemen, that was a band called, I assume they're a band called King Missile.
Yeah.
The name of that song was Part 2.
Yeah.
That's the first time you've heard that song?
Yeah.
And it's on your iTunes.
Yes, I have a massive amount of songs on my iTunes, several of them I never actually listened to.
We figured it would pertain to the episode, and it didn't. But it kind of did.
Yeah, okay.
So we're here with our top 10.
What we left
movies.
Off of before was... We talked about movies, you know, so bad they're good, movies just plain bad. And then we took a little break, and then we came back, we had some computer glitches, and now we're back. The episode's going really long, so we had to split it to part two.
Yeah, so we'll have plenty of time.
So bad if movies, if you're listening to this one first...
They deserve this two-part.
Yeah, if you're listening to this one first, don't go back and listen to the first part.
Well, I think if they're listening to this one first, they already shut it off after...
We might do a silent edit on that part two thing and just recap the entire first episode in this
one. So in the first episode... Oh my god, I fucking hate that movie.
Okay. But anyway. We're going to talk about our top 10 favorite bad movies.
Yeah, and I guess we'll just... Are we just going to jump
and
right
get
into it?
Fucked by two black studs.
Right, prepare to get fucked by two black studs. all right, my number 10, which, I know you have some reservations about me including it on this list, and...
Because there's more than one film for your number 10, which I think is against the rules.
I like long movies, so I like to pretend it's just one long movie. Anyway, it's the complete Friday the 13th series, which I debated about putting it on there. But I couldn't pick just one, but I did want them represented in some capacity because.
And
some
I'm
of
glad
are...
I introduced that to you because I grew up with Friday 13th.
Like the best, I'd seen on TV.
I didn't really idolize Jason Voorhees growing up, but like the Friday 13th movies were my favorite movies growing up. That and Batman was pretty much all.
Well, I remember
existed in my 5-year-old mind.
This past Halloween, when the Halloween USA store came to Athens and they had the life-size Jason Voorhees for like $260. You were considering it.
We both were.
We both were. I was considering it just because, you know, for knowledge
we talked about, like...
But you're considering it for, like...
Here at university...
One of your life goals.
Yeah, here at Ohio University, there's tons of, like, fundraisers people always have.
Yeah.
And a lot of film projects always have fundraisers. And we thought about having a fundraiser for just for us to buy that life-size Jason Voorhees doll.
Just sell grilled cheese, you know.
Yeah, and, like, we thought about
like
making a little short documentary of just us raising money to buy a Jason Voorhees doll.
Which would have been fun, which we didn't do, which, you know, next Halloween.
Yeah, let's hope next Halloween they have it there, because, you know.
Oh, it won't be Halloween if they don't. But, yeah, like, I love all the movies. And if you watch them straight through, they play kind of like if you read straight through a choose-your-own-adventure novel, because it's, like... I don't know. It's the continuity in this series is not
unlike most choose your own adventure ones, which a lot of stories end with you either getting in the grotto or getting killed by a spider in a cave.
Right.
And this one, you end up getting killed in a sleeping bag or getting your head smashed through a camper.
Yeah, the sleeping bag kills are some of the best because I think, yeah, the sleeping bag kills are like one of the few kills that's actually repeated in the series. It's in what, 7 and 10? Is it in 7 or 8?
I think getting stabbed when they repeat the most.
All right, fair enough. Touche. Touche.
I don't know, man. They get stabbed a lot in these movies.
What's your number 10, smartass?
Okay, my number 10 is Slaughter High, since I'm, you know, I got him in a Friday the 13th, and I've been a huge slasher film fan since I was wee little. And,
no, this is what I haven't seen. I'll have to
look. You want to know a terrifying moment?
Terrifying moment?
I once got in a fight with my sister when I was about 6 years old, and the first thing I went through was a knife. I grabbed a knife and got in a big argument with my sister.
Because you watched too many slasher films.
Yeah. Luckily, my parents stopped me, and it was a butter knife. But
it was a butter knife, and it was a toy.
Then we talked about the harms of horror films at a young age, and that could be part of it. And also, since I watched a lot of horror movies at a young age, I discovered I pretty much have no emotion.
Yeah. I kind of get that from you.
And I know a lot of people who are, like, also big horror movie fans, and, kind of the same way. It's just, like, when something, you know, like, we have no emotion. It's just, we definitely have no fear. We're like Daredevil.
All right. So, about Slaughter High.
No, Slaughter High, yeah. It was made in 1986. It was a British horror film. But made by a group of actors who are all doing American accents, which is pretty awful. And it's all about like this. It's all about these kids. It's basic slash movie storyline. It's about these group of jocks and these girls and stuff. And they decide to pull a prank on this nerdy nerd. And and the prank backfires, and he gets covered in toxic or not toxic ways. He gets covered in acid.
Yeah.
And burns down the school.
Somehow. Frog in your throat.
Yeah. And they burn down the school, and 10 years later they have a reunion.
Yeah.
Where they go in there and then they have sex, smoke pot, get drunk.
Well, that's they have a reunion on April Fool's Day.
Yeah, April Fool's Day. And then they get killed off one by one by this guy in a clown outfit who ends up being, you know, the nerd, and
that's not a spoiler. Big spoiler.
The
though.
Spoiler is this. So if cover your ears if you still want to watch this movie, don't want to get
or cut them off with a butter knife.
Yes, and it turns out the whole thing is a dream sequence by the nerd right after the accident happened 10 years ago. So this is all like, wow. Jacob's Ladder, yeah. like why acid covered his face? He hallucinated 10 years in the future.
What's the hospital show where it's all the autistic boys head?
Saint Elsewhere.
That's Saint. I couldn't remember if it's out of General Hospital. Saint Elsewhere. Yeah. Okay.
Saint Elsewhere.
The 80s were the only decade that would have tried that ending more than once.
Yeah, it's a pretty awesome show. Pretty awesome show or movie. they're both good. Saint Elsewhere. Yeah. So my review in Saint Elsewhere. I mean, I don't know. I just always like Slaughter High. I caught it when the USA they used to have that Up All Night.
Oh, yeah,
Gilbert Godfrey used to host it, and they used to have, like, they showed trauma movies, and they used to show, like, a whole bunch of just weird, like, these low-budget video trash movies and these really crazy horror films, and they showed this movie, Slaughter High, and I don't know, I watched it, like, 3 in the morning, and I was with my friend Chad, and we just really, really liked this movie for some odd reason, and we knew it was a horrible movie, but we just really liked it, and for years, I always looked for it at video stores, and then I ended up buying it online at iOffer.com.
Okay. I didn't know if you got it from like
iOffer.com is like a site where it's kind of like an eBay type thing, but you can buy a lot of out of print movies there, and I got that off there, and it came with a box art and everything because it's not available on DVD. And then afterwards, I ended up finding a VHS copy of it too. So It's a pretty good movie. It's a bad movie. It's entertaining for a cheesy, slasher movie. But
yeah.
I recommend looking for it. Go with your number 9.
Number 9 has a 9 in it. It's 1941. Steven Spielberg's epic blunder.
I actually bought that movie once at a $5 bin.
Mm-hmm.
Watched it once. Don't remember it, and then I eventually sold it.
See, it's weird because bad comedies are usually some of the worst bad movies. Like, they have no... like, if comedy fails...
We talk about disaster movie is the bomb diggity.
Because there's very little else to recommend it, you know, outside of that. But this has so much, like... it's just amazing to me to see so much money thrown at something so misguided. And, I mean, there's so many great actors in it.
Well, yeah, I remember there's a lot of good people in it.
Toshirô Mifune's in it. That was, like... It wasn't his first American movie. That was Hell in the Pacific or something.
No, he did tons of American movies.
Yeah, he did a bunch more. Was it his last American
movie? Red Sun. He did Red Sun with Charles Bronson.
Yeah, I know it's significant in some capacity.
Well, that's kind of a spaghetti one.
Was it? And, like, Christopher Lee's in it. Like, there's so many people in this movie. And, I don't know, it's just a fun movie. I'm gonna watch it. There's some genuine,
we'll have
like,
a nice,
funny things
double,
in it, too.
We'll have a nice double feature on that when we just watched Slaughter High in 1941.
Yeah, and, well, or we could I could pair it with your number nine.
My number nine stars. It's a sequel.
I can vouch
to a Roger Corman movie.
I can vouch for this movie.
And
too.
It stars
pretty awesome
Corey Feldman. And it's from 1991. It's Rock and Roll High School Forever.
And this movie is a whole lot of fun.
Oh, it is so fun.
Well, like, we had the Feldman Hay marathon.
Yeah, he was at a friend's house, and he had like this like little projector type thing.
He also owned a copy of Prayer of the Roller Boy.
Yeah, so we had a Corey Haim, Corey Feldman night, which was my friend Johnny Look, and he had a whole bunch of Corey movies, and I had a whole bunch. We combined them. We had this little movie marathon, which was like 2 days, and. This is probably one of the highlights of the whole weekend. Was Rock and Roll High School Forever, and it's
because it ended up being like it was 2 days.
Yeah,
two nights.
I mean, it was great, and everyone had a blast watching this one. It's just your basic teen high school comedy type thing, sex comedy, and it's just great. It has that one guy that looks like the Ted Mosby from How I Met Your Mother,
but it turns out
he was actually. I forget that actor's name, and I don't feel like looking up IMDb right now. But he was in Down and Out in Beverly Hills. He played the son that was obsessed with making videos, kind of like on American Beauty, but with Nick Nolte.
Yeah.
and
we watched those like around the same time, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We're like, oh, same dude. And he also played Bill on the Bill and Ted sitcom.
Oh god! Do you have that?
Yeah, I have the complete series of that.
Was that on TV Vault?
Yeah, which has a complete series of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures.
Rare TV. That's a
TV
good
show,
place to find
and maybe one of these.
We'll
days,
talk about that. Yeah,
yeah we'll do an episode on it or something.
Yeah, but it's a fun movie.
Okay, and making this list, I had a hard choice, and I decided that it was just, I mean, fun. I normally went for fun movies I had a nice memory for, just like Slaughter High. I mean, it's not really it's a lot of people that's just not a very good, it's not really good movie, not good to sit through.
But
I had a fun time watching it that one night, and I watched it again when I found it years later, and I just loved it, and it's same for this one.
Yeah, it's a
number eight.
Perfect segue.
What's your number eight, man?
Some nostalgic memories here. Nicolas Cage in Vampire's Kiss.
Vampire's Kiss.
Vampire's Kiss is my number eight. But
I rented that one of those blind buys, like a blind rent. I was probably 10 years old, 12 years old, somewhere around there, and I was looking through the movies, and I'm like, oh, Nicolas Cage movie. Why not?
Yeah, I watched it.
I rented that, and I rented that Time to Kill, which happened there, which is the movie all about when he plays like this Italian soldier who rapes this chick.
And thinks he has leprosy.
And then she discovers this chick has leprosy.
Yeah.
So then he's freaking out and depressed that he's dying of leprosy.
Which is very similar. He thinks he's a vampire in Vampire's Kiss, which is written by Joseph Mannion. He didn't write a whole lot of movies, but he wrote After Hours, which Scorsese did,
oh,
which is
a great movie.
Yeah. And the script here is not handed to as capable a filmmaker as Scorsese, but I'm not sure the script has it all there. I think there's some really good ideas. It's kind of like Nicolas Cage is a yuppie, and his performance is, he has like a fake British accent some of the time, because he thought his character would be the kind of guy who would fake a British accent some of the time. And he also eats a live cockroach, and they did multiple takes of that scene. So if you want to see
that's all it's known for. And like, it's just like, like, he'll be on Conan O'Brien, like, didn't you eat a cockroach before? And he'd be like, yes, I did.
I mean, it's one of the most bad, it's arguably his most insane performance, which, if you've seen Con Air, if you've seen The Wicker Man.
If you've seen every single one of his movies.
You know that's saying something. Yeah, like, it
Peggy Sue Gets Married, insane performance. He kind of it's just like that weird nasally, like,
yeah, he went through this whole phase with weird voices, like Raising Arizona,
and now it's just Wild weird, now it's just weird hair.
Yeah, now he's doing
acting's normal. It's just his hair is molding.
He had the Tom Hanks Da Vinci Code hair for a while, and I don't know. But Nicolas Cage, great actor, and again,
that's like a mullet with just like receding hairline mullet.
Yeah, it's a different kind of, it's a new millennium kind of hairstyle, but yeah. Definitely enjoyable movie. A lot more fun than it. I don't know. Just watching him is just so much fun for me. I don't know.
Yeah,
a lot of fun. What's your
my number eight? Your number is eight from 1983, directed by
Lucio Fulci, a filmmaker
who'll be mentioned throughout this.
We'll discuss him.
Yeah. And then it is Conquest.
Oh, man.
Conquest. We showed this movie to so many people.
No, not the whole thing.
No, but really, the whole movie, I'll give a good synopsis of what this movie is, but I've seen this several times, and I have no fucking idea what this movie's about.
Yeah, nobody does.
No. I think, I know most of the sets consist of a fog machine, so this could have been filmed in his backyard for all we know.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But...
Oh, my God.
The first 20 minutes of the film,
yeah,
it's by far the greatest thing.
We always said the first five, but then we actually sat down to show it to people, and it's like, oh, it's like 20 minutes.
And it's like,
it flies by.
It's great. Okay, yeah. Here's what happens. These little werewolf dog
Chewbacca-looking
creatures, yeah. Kidnap these people, rip them in half.
No, split them like a wishbone.
Oh, yeah, split them like a wishbone. And then this naked lady wearing this Destructo...
Eyes Wide Shut mask, yeah.
Eyes Wide Shut, like, Destructo... G.I. Joe, all gold mask.
Armor head.
Yeah, and cuts the head off.
Oh, she's topless, by the way.
Yeah, completely, yeah. Yeah, and she, smashes the skull and then, like, smokes it.
She takes a straw and sucks up brain shit.
Yeah, then kind of, like, smokes it or something like that sort of thing. Then she has sex with a snake.
And has a vision.
Has a vision. And then she gets shot with a laser arrow.
By the guy in the vision. And then...
This movie only makes sense on drugs. So we've never done drugs to this movie.
No, it makes sense on PCP plus cocaine plus... Like,
I don't know.
You have to take a lot of drugs.
I don't want to do a lot of drugs and watch this movie. I'm not much of a druggie. I want to do a lot of drugs just to watch that movie.
The only reason I would ever do PCP is to understand Conquest. Because, yeah. It didn't make my list because I didn't feel like I could talk about it, really. I'm kind of afraid. If I say something wrong, I think the movie could kill me in my sleep.
The last two on my list, Rocker High School Forever, Conquest, they're both on DVD.
Yeah,
get these Netflix.
Yeah, the best. Conquest,
if you're friends with
DVD.
Us, we'll let you borrow them.
Conquest has a DVD release.
And Blue Underground. It's pretty good DVD release.
Yeah, worth every penny, I think.
Okay, what's your number seven?
My number seven is it's not the most popular Ed Wood film, but to me, it's the most hilarious because I saw the movie Ed Wood before I ever saw an Ed Wood film, and Glenn or Glinda. Managed to contain my favorite moment from the Ed Wood movie, which I couldn't believe was actually real when I actually sat down to watch Glenn or Glinda. I mean, I knew it was real from the movie. I didn't think they made it up, but I didn't know that it was actually real. The stock footage of the buffalo running and Boris Karloff saying, "Pull the string!
Pull
the string!" That's from this movie. Boris Karloff kind of narrates a story about a guy who likes to dress in women's clothes.
Played by Ed Wood.
Played by Ed Wood. And Dolores Fuller, is it Dolores Fuller is her name? She went on to write songs for Elvis, right?
I think so, yeah.
She's played by Sarah Jessica Parker's. Played by Sarah Jessica Parker.
Which, there's a little documentary on the Play 9 DVD, and she says that Sarah Jessica Parker was kind of a bitch. and she didn't even like bother ever talking to her or anything like that. The character she was playing, and she overheard her talking at like the rap party or something. Talking about her, like, oh, I just played some dumb actress, just some dumb girl, and Doris Fuller didn't really take that kindly because she's like, you're a bitch.
Well,
she didn't say those kind of words because she's a kind old lady,
right?
But
yeah, well,
But Glenn, which you watched my copy, which I actually bought directly from Comrade Brooks.
Right, which...
Which is kind of weird, because, like, it is a DVD... It is, like, a DVD cop, like a DVD-R copy of it.
Yeah, it really...
So, it's pretty cool that, like, Comrade Brooks, the guy's in the movie, is
he doesn't even have his own DVD. He's selling bootlegs of his own movie, basically.
That's great.
Yeah, Glenda, check it out. Especially if you already have seen Planet from Outer Space, this one's at least as good.
Yeah.
In my mind. What's your number
seven? Yeah. You haven't seen this. It's from 1987. Yeah. It's called Hell Squad.
I heard a clip from this when you were preparing some sound clips for the show.
Yeah.
Which I don't think it's going to be in the show, but we can add it later, maybe. I don't know.
I don't want to.
I don't know what it was.
This is on Netflix.
I asked if it was Red Dawn, and it isn't.
Yeah.
It's Hell Squad.
It's on Netflix, I think. It's all about this Prime Minister's son, something son, gets kidnapped by terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And they think the best way to get him back is to get showgirls, Vegas showgirls, and train them to go on a secret mission to get back this kidnapped son.
Okay.
And this takes place during a water shortage, so they all have to bathe together. This isn't necessarily a porno, because it doesn't have a lot of sex. It has a few nude scenes, but it's like a porno without the sex.
Why is it called Hell Squad? Are they like...
I don't know. But I mean, it's awesome.
I mean, it's a good name. It's like a pre-sold title. They sell the title and then they put it in the video. I have a copy of it,
and I always been trying to get people to watch it, but no one wants to watch it. Because I tried to sell it. I'm like, but it sounds so retarded. And they're just like, no, man, I don't want to watch that. It sounds like a porn. I'm like, I know, but it isn't.
No, you don't watch the porn you own. You let me watch it by accident. It's not really porn. It's another movie. I don't know.
And
you own some weird movies.
What's your?
My number six. Okay, the only reason this is so low is because it really is only watchable with the Mystery Science Theater 3000 commentary. The movie is Monos, Hands of Fate. The story behind it is amazing. The movie itself is just...
Oh, yeah, the Torgo killed himself, right after shooting that.
I mean, Entertainment Weekly wrote a great article on the movie, that's like a year or two ago.
Torgo is supposed to be like half man, half goat.
Right, and...
And instead, he just looked like a man with a puffy knees.
I there's nothing I can say about this movie that wasn't said better by a robot silhouette. So, I'm just gonna... I mean... The best line is
one of the most famous episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
And rightly so, because it has one of my favorite lines from the whole series that I can remember. It's, every frame of this movie looks like someone's last known photograph.
That's one of the few episodes, too, where the characters were, like, normally on Mystery Science Theater, they're just, like...
They have something to... They're
just making fun of the movie, but during this movie, they're just like, oh, God, we can't watch it!
At a certain point, it just gets so bad that the humor just gets sucked out of them.
They're just, like, commenting on each other and not being able to get through this movie.
It's like, so, wow, this movie really is bad. Like,
okay.
What's your number six
is from 1990. I put dates down on mine. Take that, bull.
Well, Monos and Hands of Fate came out in, fuck you.
My number six is from 1990, and we talked about it earlier, and that's Troll 2.
And we can talk about it some more, because I did like it a lot. Never, ever watch Troll.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone knows about this movie. It's getting pretty popular. Most of you listeners probably already seen it. If not, I suggest it. It's a good one. I was a big fan of this when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And for some odd reason, when I'd watch this one, it used to be on TV all the time. They still show it on Showtime Beyond every once in a while.
Yeah.
And I used to watch this movie all the time. And for some odd reason, I always thought that main kid was Corey Haim.
Really?
I have no idea why when I was real, I thought it was Corey Haim. And I used to like that movie. I thought it was good. And then I watched it when I got older and I realized, how in the hell did I think that movie was good?
I think you saw the first Troll.
No. I watched First Troll once when I was younger and hated it. I never finished it.
So
when I watched it when I was like now, I still hated it.
Oh my!
But I love Troll 2.
Troll 2, yeah, it's a really
your
fun movie.
Top five.
We're on the top five. Number five is not a particularly well known bad movie. It is a film made by an ex Dogma 95 director named Thomas Vinterberg. It's got Joaquin Phoenix, Claire Danes, and even Vinterberg was like a pupil of Ingmar Bergman. Like Ingmar Bergman was his mentor, and Ingmar Bergman took this film to Ingmar Bergman and asked him to help him edit it together, and Bergman would not touch it, like not even to like you know offer any, he offered no guidance whatsoever, because this film is, it's a mess, it's an incredibly well shot mess. It's called It's All About Love.
I just like how people's randomly dying in this movie.
People die. Streets. People die because they.
And Sean Penn's always in a plane.
Sean Penn's always in a plane because.
But why don't you tell? Yeah. Why don't you tell them what the movie's about? Because I like to know myself.
Yeah, well, I've seen it twice now. I know you saw it. You saw it once, right? Yeah. I like made you borrow it because I actually heard about it from the My Year of Flops series that Nathan Rabin does on the AV Club. Really, really great article series of articles. But
yeah, which we should mention before in bad movies, but that's something that's a big bad movie.
Yeah, like, really.
He's doing ton of these big reviews, and they're really good reviews, and they're real funny.
And it's a really big inspiration for
He made me buy Dr. Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, he made me buy It's All About Love. He made me buy so many, like, I bought so many movies.
Yeah, and what's just like, and they're really good podcast, or really good articles, and he's not really talking about, like, that these movies are real bad. They're just movies that are flops. And
They're rated Secret Success, like, it's actually good. Fiasco, like, it's just amazing.
And a failure.
And failure, which is just, it's bad. Which is probably, you know, it's as good a rating system for bad movies or notorious movies like this as it gets. And this movie, he actually made up a rating for. I think this was the first one. Super secret fiasco failure-esque or something. Like, it was all three, because it's like Claire Danes and Joaquin Phoenix are getting divorced. Claire Danes is an ice skater. There's like, they're cloned her, and they have a bunch, there's a scene on the ice where there's a sniper up in the arena, and he's like sniping all the ice skaters, and Joaquin Phoenix is trying to save Claire Danes' life and their marriage, and it gets really weird, and people are dying because they can't feel love anymore. Oh, stop recording. Go back.
Sorry, I hit a button.
Oh, it didn't stop recording. Oh, stop messing with it. Anyway, it's still going.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's an incredibly bizarre movie. I don't know, I can't get enough of it. There's some really interesting ideas. There's some great sequences, great shots that just out of context are amazing. In context, they don't make sense, so I don't know. It's really well made. I really would like to see more from that director. I mean, I think he made a movie later that I haven't seen. It's called like Dear Frankie or something, or Dear something. It's Dear
is
something.
Is it Dear Wendy?
Dear Wendy, yeah, I think it might
be. Yeah, that was a piece of shit.
Okay, well,
Your Movie Sucks.
Oh, okay.
That Ebert did.
Well, It's All About Love is an incredibly ambitious potential piece of shit.
Okay. Okay.
I could talk about that for a while. Okay. Number five.
Okay. My number five is also from 1986, the year of my birth.
All
right. And that is Howard the Duck.
Before we talk about it. Coming out on DVD March 10th.
Hell fucking yeah. Great special edition DVD. I'm buying four copies.
They have a retrospective documentary where they talk to the filmmakers like today.
And the reason I picked Howard the Duck is I'm also a big comic book fan, and one of my favorite comic book people, like comic books, it really is Howard the Duck. I'm just a big fan of Howard the Duck, and I'm also a fan of bad movies, so this is the ultimate, you know.
The movie isn't like the comic book Howard the Duck, though.
Oh, no, not really, but I still find it entertaining. Yeah. I discovered by watching this movie recently, well, first off, one of the opening scenes had duck boobs and duck nipples, which is fucking masturbatable.
Masturbatable?
I don't know, man.
It has one of the best stop motion monsters in the from the 1980s.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But I discovered what's truly bad about this movie isn't like, you know, the bad script or and all that. It's Jeffrey Jones,
which I have to watch it again because I don't remember.
There's
this
one scene. There's something in the car when he's like transformed into the monster. He's like, "I'm transforming. There's something inside of me."
I feel like
and he's driving. He's like, "I'm." And I discovered. That's the worst scene in the entire movie. And, like, just Jeffrey Jones in this movie is shit.
Well,
Tim Robbins is very annoying in this movie, too. And I'm a big Tim Robbins fan.
Yeah.
Actually, I was on eBay once looking up Howard the Duck stuff, like I normally do. And I saw I could have bought pants that Tim Robbins wore.
In Howard the Duck?
From Howard the Duck. It was, like, $15. And it actually had, like, the proof of authenticity. And it had his name written on, like, one of the tags. And... Yeah.
You didn't?
No, because it's retarded.
No, but it's, I don't know, sheer novelty. Like, just frame them, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Like Howard the Duck. The music's good. I mean, I had a look, but I was a big fan of this movie when I was younger. I even had a Howard the Duck t-shirt when I, like, when I was really little too. And I don't know.
I mean, here's a, I didn't get a chance actually, to see it until recently.
I'm still a big fan of the comic. I'd love to make a new version of Howard the Duck, like, but I wouldn't make it as a live action movie. I'd make it as a cartoon or something like that. So
right,
because live action movie cartoon, like, or something like that. But yeah. I mean, it'd be kind of hard to do now since Steve Gerber's dead.
Oh really?
Yeah, he died. Great, right? And I suggest go out there and read the comic. You can get the Essential Howard the Duck book out there now, and it's like $15, and you get like 26 issues or something like that of Howard the Duck, and it's a great read. It's a great satire on comic books and the current world, and like it's really great. I suggest go out there and get the comic. I definitely suggest you get the movie March 10th.
Yeah, everybody buy the movie so that hopefully George Lucas will finally release a Star Wars holiday special.
Oh, maybe. The greatest thing ever made.
Because, yeah, all right. Anyway, my number 4 now. Wow, we're really moving along. Tobe Hooper is one of my favorite directors. And I really liked this, just the, I don't know, what he brings to movies. And I maintain that he directed more Poltergeist than Spielberg did. Because it's scary. And this movie is Life Force from 1985, I believe.
Yep.
With Steve Rails back. Patrick Stewart in like an early role. This is like pre Next Generation.
I think at this point he'll just sort of Shakespearean actor.
Yo, Shakespeare! And it's about what? Zombie vampires like attacking London, and there's like big blood monsters and naked women walking around. And
crazy, over the top, weird, retarded.
Yeah. It's a kind of ambitious bad movie that it might actually be pretty good, but I don't really know. It's not as, it's more like it's not as unintelligible as Conquest, but it is pretty.
I haven't seen this movie in years, and like I caught it on TV one night.
Probably Showtime Beyond.
Yeah, Showtime Beyond has a lot of weird, crazy movies. And I remember watching this. Actually, I think it was on regular cable. I think it was on like just regular
just
cable.
Just like the sci-fi channel?
Channel. I was watching it really late one night, and I didn't know what this movie was. I didn't know who the director was. And I was watching it, and I'm just like, this is the greatest movie ever made.
Yeah, it's.
And I discovered it was Tobe Hooper. I'm like, oh.
This is like Tobe the Hooper. Mid-80s when he was given a ton of money to make 3 movies. And one of them was this, the other two were Invaders from Mars, the remake, which is pretty good. And then the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which is actually like. Really, really fun.
I had the poster of it in the apartment.
Probably one of the best movie posters of all time. Yeah, at least top 10. You know,
it is.
But yeah, Life Force, check it out. It's on DVD. It's pretty cheap. Amazing. I think they sell it in a 2 or 3 pack. They sell it in a 3 pack with a couple of good movies too.
Yeah. My number 4. That's from 1979.
Yeah.
And the reason I had it for number 4, I'm not really sure why. Because,
I don't understand
because
why.
This deserves to be at the top 10 of everything. But I'm not going to mention it now because you have it on your number 1.
All right.
And we'll just wait to be the number 1, and we both talk about that.
All right, yeah. But just know that his number 4 is also my number 1. Because, okay. All right. Will you go ahead and do your number 3 so you can talk about.
Okay.
Talk about that.
Now you can go to your number 4.
All right. My number 3 is a movie that everybody loved, Donnie Darko. You know? Everybody loved it.
Yeah, everybody loves Donnie Darko.
And then nobody went to see Southland Tales. And it might be better. It really might.
Southland Tales. Yeah, I show this movie.
We watched this movie like, what, 4 or 5 times a piece?
Yeah.
We showed this movie to a few people.
A few people, and it's like, I showed everyone. They didn't completely hate the movie.
Yeah.
But they didn't like it either. They're just like, afterwards, we would just try to describe what we just saw and what we thought of it. But it's just like, I don't know what this is.
See, the thing is, I'm in a kind of a, not like a peculiar, not like a, I'm privileged over other people, but like a lot of people have had a chance to see the Cannes cut, the original cut of Southland Tales, since it's been playing on a channel in the UK, and I've managed to get a copy online. And after watching that cut does atmosphere better, but then... It takes out a lot of that opening, 20-minute PowerPoint presentation from the theatrical cut of Southland Tales. So there's a lot of stuff I like better about that, but then some of the best sequence. And they also give Janine Garofalo lines in the original cut instead of her just showing up at the end. But then the original cut, some of the best scenes in the movie aren't as well put together in the original cut. So there's flaws in both. And I really love to see Richard Kelly just sit down with someone, you know, a more like, not necessarily a better filmmaker, but a filmmaker who's more like precise and like is better at just cutting out a better editor, like a really good editor who could just help him like sort this out and get it all together and put it and make it into the best movie possible, because there's a great movie in there.
Yeah.
And it's already pretty great. But, you know, right now it's unintelligible. And a lot of people, you know, just won't even bother with it.
It's a mess. There's a comic book I like to read.
Yeah, there's the three prequel graphic novels. And
it's a good alternate history line. And it's a very interesting movie. I don't think I can talk about it. I don't think I know how. I don't think words can express it.
Every time,
maybe if I had a poet with me, I can describe it in a poem form. The only way to make sense.
Every time you watch it, like there's something different, and not just because there's two different cuts. Like every time I watch the theatrical cut several times, and there's little things that I pick up on in the dialogue that they mentioned way early on that come back later when there's no like they don't make you think there's a connection. You know, they don't. I don't know.
Okay.
It's a mind fuck. What's your number three?
Okay, my number three.
This is the Thinking Man's movie right here.
This is from 1984, directed by the late and super great Bob Clark.
Yeah, fuck Drunk Drivers, by the way.
Yeah, and that is Rhinestone. Rhinestone starring Sylvester Stallone, which, oh yeah, I forgot to mention beginning of this podcast, but Stallone, I'm guaranteed going to be mentioned at least every episode.
Yeah, he had to personally approve these top 10 lists before we were going to.
Because I'm like a super big Sloan movie and Sloan fan, and we're actually going to do a super, super duper. You think this is a long ass podcast? We're going to do one on every single Sloan movie eventually in the future.
We're going to try and sit down and watch them.
It's going to be like a Sloan month. It's going to be insane. But this movie, Rhinestone, stars Sylvester Stallone and Dolly Parton. And it's all about. Stallone plays a cabbie, this New York cabbie, crazy cabbie.
Yep.
And
Dolly Parton is a country singer.
Yeah, and Dolly Parton plays Dolly Parton plays a country singer. She has a horrible manager, and she wants to get out of her contract. And the only way she does this bet with him, does this bet.
He's pitching the movie now, by the way.
I'm pitching the movie to you guys.
He's remaking it, yeah.
Okay. And does this bet with this guy that she can turn the next guy she sees into a big country star. And guess who walks in the door? Guess who walks in the door? You guessed it right. Stallone.
Crazy cabbie.
Uh-huh. And they get together and they're like sweet loving friends.
And Stallone learns how to walk. He learns how to walk like he's got a jock itch.
That's how you walk like a cowboy.
Yep.
And the movie is, the only problem is I think it's a little too long.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there.
Has a weird pacing problem, but it's known for one of the worst movies ever made.
Well, and the best part is
it's actually funny at times it's supposed to be funny, and it's still funny at times where it's not supposed to.
The best part was when my dad. I was telling my dad you had lots of old TV shows and old movies, like obscure stuff, and he was like, "Hold on, I got one. There's no way he has this movie. This is one of the worst movies I've ever seen." Rhinestone, you know, the Stallone Dolly Parton movie, and I walked over and I grabbed it. I looked at it. I was like, and I like started reading in the synopsis off the back of the DVD. I'm like, I'm reading it off the back of the DVD. Right? He's like, no, that's the worst movie I've ever seen. But it's not.
Yeah, I think it's really not. The music's actually really good. Stallone does the song Drunkenstein.
I love this. It was his ringtone for like about a year before I actually saw the movie.
It's still my ringtone.
Yeah, and I love it. It's a great song.
Oh, I love Rhinestone.
Who wrote Dolly Parton wrote all the music for it, which.
And Stallone wrote some of it too.
Yeah.
And Stallone wrote the screenplay. And the movie.
He co-wrote it with Phil Alden Robinson.
And the movie's based on the song I'm a Rhinestone Cowboy, Bleep Blue.
All right.
I suggest everyone watch Rhinestone, and we'll talk more about it in the Stallone cast.
But right now, I think it's important to note that our number twos are identical, and we independently made them so.
Okay.
We did not plan to make them the same movie. And we're going to have to make a part three because this is going to be the next 25 minutes of the podcast. All right. Let's just say what's the website?
Winterbeast.com.
Go there now. Okay, we'll wait for you. Okay. Are you there?
If you listen to this in your car, write it down right now.
Winterbeast.com. W-I-N-T-E-R.
Pause this. Go to the site. Do a little research.
B-E-A-S-T.
Might want to turn down your computer speaker or something, because the site is pretty loud.
.com.
It always plays this music. It's kind of annoying.
Winterbeast.
Okay. Let's pause it. You're back now? Winterbeast. The movie we're talking about is Winterbeast. The site is fucking awesome. Winterbeast is fucking awesome in every way. It is truly one of the worst movies we've ever seen.
If people from Twin Peaks made a bad movie, I don't know. That's not. It's like Twin Peaks.
Okay,
it's like Equinox. It's like The Evil Dead.
It's like Winter Beast. Let's say if Uwe Boll made Twin Peaks.
Fair enough.
That's what Winterbeast would be.
If Twin Peaks was made by a fertilizer salesman from, what is it, Texas?
Yeah. El Paso, Texas.
You have Winterbeast. Well, where to begin? What can we really say about the... Like, it's amazing.
Okay.
Well, there's an opening, like, scene in this one room.
The part is, all the monsters are clay animation, which is always great.
And they always look like they're dancing. Which is awesome.
And it's just so weird, and the story is so... The acting's so bad, and it's like...
It's so ineptly shot.
It looks like the DP was also one of the actors. Because it actually looks like he kind of hit play and then ran in front of the camera.
And you know this from experience. Like, every once in a while, you don't have that extra cameraman.
Yeah, I've done it before. Yeah. I've done it before in a movie.
It's, I can't really just...
It's extremely bad. We recommend it on the highest.
It has a really good score.
Yeah.
It has a really good score, and it has some really interesting performances. In Wet Hot American Summer.
Michael
Showalter's stand-up routine is ripped off, I believe, I really hope this is true, from Winter Beast.
Yeah.
There's a character, what is he, like the hotel owner?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's crazy. We find out.
It's so weird. And I'm pretty sure... This movie's getting a big, like, cult following going on.
Hopefully.
Like,
yeah.
There was this festival in New York, and they that's where I discovered it. I had a friend of mine who was... She emailed me about this film festival she's going to and asked me if I heard any of these movies. And, of course, they had that Bad Biology movie there, and I suggested that.
Frank Henenlotter.
Yeah, which is his new movie, which he has in the movie for
great
years.
Filmmaker.
And there's a couple others, and then there's one called Winter Beast, and that says the worst movie ever made. I'm like, I've never heard of this. So I quickly researched it, got it up, and got it.
Cinemageddon.org.
And we watched it. Greatest thing ever. And then I recently went on the website, which you just visited.
Right. Hopefully you've already bought the DVD and the T-shirt.
And they had a holiday special for like $17. You can get a T-shirt, a movie, the soundtrack, autographed poster, and postcards from the lodge where the movie takes place.
And it's waiting at home for you. And actually, I don't know why you're not on the way there right now.
Yeah, next time, because I got to ship there.
Next podcast, he'll be wearing a Winter Beast T-shirt.
I got around Christmas time, and I can't wait to... I'm wearing that T-shirt nonstop. And it's...
Yeah, shipping did take a while from the site, but it's worth the wait. Would not even believe.
You buy it through PayPal.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but you can get the DVD for, like, $7 there. You can get the DVD, like, a lot of the main sites.
You get it off of Amazon,
too. Yeah, you can get it from Netflix. I put it in your queue right now. If you haven't put it in your queue, or if your friends of us haven't borrowed it from us, why do you hate us? Why do you hate cinema?
Yeah,
what's wrong with you? What the fuck is wrong with you, huh?
This is a movie...
What's wrong? Are you too good for Winter Beast? Are you too good for us? You think you're better than us? You think you're better than Winter Beast?
Nobody's better than Winter Beast.
I will cut you! I will cut you!
Alright, the thing about Winter Beast is it's so good, and we're trying to tell more, as many people, like, we tell everyone about it that we can, and especially when movies like The Room did, like, a huge cult following, but Winter Beast is like...
Here in our apartment, since we're still college students and drinking is like, woo!
Yeah.
We actually have an office water cooler. And we're gonna fill it up with alky, and we're going to show Winter Beast
and ingest the alky from the water cooler.
Yeah, so we're gonna have a big Winter Beast party.
And then we might cap it off with Tomcats. We really haven't decided on a second on the double bill, because it has to be a double.
Okay, it's good. Your number one, which is also my number four.
Yeah, well, do you want to do that, or do you want to do your number one and then close out with the one that's on both our lists?
Okay, well, I gotta do my number one. My
number one. It's one another one I haven't seen, which now I have to see it.
Other than my love for horror films, which is probably my love for westerns is probably bigger.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Western is the one true American art form that's also been made better by foreigners.
Right.
But it's just a true American art form, and this movie is from 1939, and it is The Terror of Tiny Town.
I thought you were gonna say when I saw the title, I thought you were gonna say the only thing I love more than horror movies is midgets.
Yeah, it's
westerns make sense. Prefer little people.
Which, my opinion, sounds more like an insult than midgets, but whatever.
Yeah, like little people. Like, look at all the little people.
Yeah, it's just
I want
like,
to say it with a limey British accent.
Okay, yeah, they would be respected, yet they would be called little people, which is sounds more demeaning than calling them midgets. It's, midgets sounds more proper.
Right. Yeah,
but they still prefer dwarfs, which is like
yeah,
dwarfs.
Yeah, they prefer
like,
dwarves to...
Dwarfs, what's this like, come on,
they're
dwarfs?
Mythical creatures.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You exist, it's like... You guys frolic around centaurs and... I don't know. Oh, anyway.
Goodbye, dwarves. It was nice. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, okay.
We're assholes.
We are. Okay, this is a... Okay, Terror of Tiny Town is an all-midget cast musical. It's just your traditional Western, mostly traditional 1930s Western. And it is extremely strange, has musical scenes.
Is it like Freaks? Because it seems like... What you've shown
some
me...
Some of the same
midgets
Freaks.
Like Freaks, yeah.
But pretty much every working midget... In that time period is in this movie. A lot of the same images as in Wizard of Oz is also in this one. And it's cute. It's cute. It's a cute little film.
They just like, skip around.
Yeah, and the songs is like... I think David, this is like Jack. And like, I don't know.
There's music in it.
Musical, yeah. And midgets drinking big mugs of beer. And
Flagons.
It's
Flagons of Ale.
It's cute, man. It's cute. That's all I can say. It's cute.
It's we'll probably throw that on tonight, maybe. I don't know.
It's pretty short.
I've got to see
it's pretty short. It's like
it's on Google,
70 minutes.
Isn't it? It's on Google Video and stuff.
Yeah, I always have a copy of it, man.
Well, yeah, but I mean
for
them. That's what I'm saying.
It's Terror of Tiny Town.
I'm saying for them, for our listeners. Who can't borrow your copy. Yeah, it's on Google.
I don't know. I think most of our listeners would be just our friends right now.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you are our friends.
Way to be ambitious.
Yeah, if you're ever around Ohio, you know, just give us a message and you can be on our show.
Yeah.
Why not?
Why not?
Okay, Terror of Tiny Town, the reason it's my number one on my list is because, you know, I love Westerns and it's musical. I'm not a big fan of musicals, but I love bad musicals. So,
yeah,
that's one of those two.
And now, we're going to go back to your number four, but my number one... which I don't know why it's number four on your list, but I can respect it.
It's because Stallone and Winterbees and Terror of Chinatown slightly better.
All right. Well,
but, I mean, it's let's see, Terror of Chinatown, Winterbees, and Rhinestone are all a tie for number one. So then I just find a way to make them.
Yeah. So
and to make sacrifices.
Right.
Because Terror of Chinatown proves I have a heart.
Right.
It's a black evil heart, yet the heart still thinks it's cute.
Dude, there's so much heart in...
They ride ponies, man! Instead of horses, ponies! It's cute, man! It's cute!
It's
cute!
There's more heart in a single frame of Disco
My heart
Godfather.
Just got three sizes bigger.
My number one is Disco Godfather.
From 1979, Rudy Ray Moore. Which is
Put your weight on it! Put your weight on it!
Bitch,
Put
are your you weight for real?
It. Where is Bucky? And what has he had?
Where? Why? Okay, we just quoted a whole bunch of random... Yeah. Disco Godfather...
We're here to attack the whack.
Oh, what was that? What you said earlier was... You said, like, the greatest line ever of that movie. It's like...
It's like they had... it's a 93-minute film that they had to shoot in about 80 minutes. Like...
And the movie is awesome in every way. It's a... Of course, it's a black exploitation film.
Mm.
And it's...
Of the... Okay.
It's probably the best... I mean...
We haven't seen Petey Wheatstraw, the Devil's Son-in-Law, yet. But of the films in the Dolomite collection, this trumps Dolomite and Human Tornado.
Human Tornado!
In everything but a musical sense. Because Human Tornado's probably got the best song. Yeah, it's got... Well, it's got Julius J. Curry. What's his name?
Yeah.
Something
like that.
He's in it, and this is, like, I think his debut film.
Yeah. He played Bucky.
He was later in Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.,
yeah,
amongst other things. Yeah, Disco Godfather is,
looking at my copy of Briscoe County Jr. Right
looking
now.
At my copy of the Dolomite collection, 100% officially disapproved by the man.
Yeah, most of you, I mean, most of you on here should already have seen Disco Godfather. If not, get it now.
I don't know if it's only available in the box set, but if it is...
Then no, it's not. You can get it outside.
You can get it, okay, but get the box set. It's worth it,
too. The box set's fucking gorgeous. Rudy Ray Moore is fucking insane.
You know you want it.
And Dolomite's... Disco Godfather is all about Rudy Ray Moore fighting Angel Dust.
Yeah, and there's some really bizarre, like, sequences of people, like, coked out on Angel Dust, where they animate over the film.
It kind of reminds, like, really it kind of reminds a little of Glenn or Glenda.
And the level of ineptitude on display from a filmmaking sense.
And that whole weird, like, dress, weird, really...
And there's all the weird scenes where they're trying to exercise the one woman, and then, like, it keeps coming out to, like, that, thank you, Jesus, and you're like, the, ah! And then, like, these, like... It's a scary movie. It's not for children.
Disco Godfather. If you guys heard this enough, we gotta get wrapping up because we're about going an hour on this one as well.
But I think we did all these movies as much justice as we can.
Want to know more about these movies, IMDb them, stuff like that. We'll put a list of our top 10 maybe on the side or something like that.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll try to post links to
some stuff. That's latenightmovieemporium.blogspot.com. That's what we have now. We'll eventually get a real site, but that costs money, and that also involves, like, web design, which I know nothing about.
Right, computers?
And I'm the tech savvy one. I'm the one that's like recording all this and all this stuff, and I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
I'm the guy who's like, I just figured out the button in the middle of my mouse pulls up, like, a calendar and stuff. So let's move on to...
We have more of a agenda for the bad movies.
Just a couple more, like, quick things we wanted to talk about. Bad directors.
Yeah, like, a lot of these movies have bad directors, and there's a few of those which are become the king of bad B-movies, bad movies,
There's two names that stand out from the, like, ahead of all the others. Yeah. There's Edward D. Wood Jr.
Yeah.
And one we haven't mentioned so far, really. We mentioned him just in passing. But because he hasn't really made... an incredibly enjoyable bad movie that I've seen. You've seen Blood Rain.
Blood Rain's fucking awesome in every way.
People
get stabbed in the face, man! Stabbed in the face!
And I get... He just stabbed me in the face, guys.
And it has Meatloaf wearing the most hideous wig, covered with actual prostitutes from
Somehow Charlie Chaplin's daughter got sucked into this production,
too. Oh, there's a lot of people in it, man.
And... Ben Kingsley, an Oscar winner.
Well, it's and we're talking
Ben
about
Kingsley does anything.
Uva Bull or Uva Uva
Uva Ova
Ova. I don't know. U Bull.
Yeah,
I heard Uva and I heard Yule.
I've heard all of it. I don't know. Raging Bull. Let's just call him that from now on.
Yeah. Okay.
House of the Dead's a lot of fun.
I really want a funny version. But I mean, you guys know a lot of his. We'll probably eventually.
We'll talk more about him.
Talk more about him in the future.
But here's bad filmmakers. Edward got to make movies because he filled a certain need for B movies. And Raging Bull.
But my favorite B movie
filmmaker
and, like, bad movies is Jim Wynorski. Wynorski, which I met him at the B Movie Festival. He got the Lifetime Achievement Award there.
And he deserved it.
Yeah, and I want to come up with and tell him, I'm like, now that you got a achievement award, are you scared that you're gonna die soon? Because most people get those die soon.
But then you thought you'd seem like a
creepy fan. Then I thought I'd seem like a creepy fan who wanted to kill him, so I decided not to say that.
But yeah, he made Deathstalker 2, Duel of the Titans, which if you've ever seen an episode of Hercules or Xena, from that movie.
Deathstalker 2 is amazing.
On our site,
we have the trailer for it because I decided to put it on there.
Yeah, we watched it for this Bad Movie podcast, but it's good.
Oh, it's really so good. It's like he got hired to make a barbarian movie, and instead he made
a good movie.
He made like a road movie.
Yeah, which is
it seemed more like a Road to Rio movie than Ishtar did.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a better
and movie it's a barbarian Ishtar, yeah. movie.
He also did Chopping Mall.
He came from the house of Roger Corman sort of thing. So he's. But he's the one that still sticks to the Roger Corman ones now. He did Chopping Mall, which is a great little short horror film about evil robots in a mall.
He did
Return to Swamp Thing, which is a really great. Probably I like that one better than the first one. He does a lot of these really crappy B movies are so great. His first one he did was Lost Empire, which is just so fucking awesome. And I saw that on the 35mm, and it was gorgeous. It was the greatest night ever. I saw that in Chopping Mall on 35mm in that theater, and it was just...
Babies were made during that.
Babies were made. Let's just say the women got pretty wet. How do I hip waders, man?
Goodbye, women listener. Who stuck with us this far?
Yeah.
I applaud you and your perseverance.
This is a very long podcast.
And
now he does like softcore. He did
the Bear Winch project. He did the Da Vinci Co-ed.
He did The Hills Have Thighs.
Yeah.
He does a lot of those movies. He does a lot of sci-fi original ones. He's not as big as he used to be in the 80s, but
I mean, you know,
bad movies.
He makes
bad
his money
movies.
Off of
all the most bad movies are made in the 80s because it's the decade of our Lord.
And you know, we're kind of running out of time. There's a lot of stuff I wanted to mention. There's just a couple of movies that we didn't really get to mention, like The Manitou.
Yeah, there's a lot
which
of great
I
ones.
I just want to throw that. I don't know who directed
like, this.
This
is
but
a really big subject, and yeah, we just
we'll return to this subject.
This
is
a very
not
broad
the final
subject.
Say. Yeah,
and yeah, and this is just something that's just like we'll get a gist of what type of stuff we'll kind of focus on a lot.
Yeah,
and
I mean, we're the you know just give us a gist of what kind of people we are, what we'll talk about, and really, yeah, I mean, there's so many movies that we didn't even get a chance to mention that are you know, like, that didn't make our list.
But the final note we should make is just, like, where we see the future of bad movies.
See, the ultimate pessimistic thing that I could think of is, like, eventually, criticism will become obsolete and everything will just be good, you know? Like, because if bad movies can rise and, you know, like, certain bad movies... I hate to keep singling out the room because it does have a lot of funny things, but it's celebrated so much and with such, like, vigor by so many people. And I don't, I honestly can't fathom it.
What I think is, like...
And if that's celebrated like that, like, so many other movies, you know, what else?
Yeah,
you know?
And of course, I think bad movies are considered art more now than they used to be. And I think a lot of this because of TV, like Mr. Science Theater 3000.
Right.
And a lot of Flops. And a lot of like Adult Swim on Cartoon Network and stuff because they have a lot of that like that anti-humor and stuff like that.
And that
humor is becoming a norm and just like the crazy weirdness.
Yeah.
And that's getting people into these weird movies a lot too.
Right.
And plus weird TV too, like that show Tim and Eric's awesome show, Great Job.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's made like a really weird public access stuff. And it's just really crazy and weird. And there's a lot of that. I think it's just, it's making bad movies more mainstream to the point where we're getting, like, I remember a few years ago, a long time ago, we had Kung Pao, which is making fun of bad movies.
Well, and then a couple years ago, Snakes on a Plane came out. And that was a big deal.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of this, like, mainstream movies making these bad movies on purpose.
And they don't, yeah.
We
they,
had like
they don't
Doomsday.
Really work as well. Well, Doomsday was fun.
It was real fun. We had movies like Shoot 'em Up and stuff like that, which is kind of like playing off that. And
which
making,
is, it's interesting, you know, it's both a good and a bad thing because, you know, every once in a while it doesn't work, like, you know, Snakes on a Plane, which is just, you know, what, you know, okay. It's kind of a weird idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's.
Okay. And
I do want to say one more thing about, I mean, bad movies, like, with technology the way it is, anyone can make a movie. It's not that difficult. And especially if someone's really determined and they don't have a whole lot of resources, they can make a really bad movie.
Yeah.
So we're not done with the homegrown bad movies, and we should be seeing more quality, factory-made bad movies.
Yeah, we only focus much on factory-made bad movies in this podcast.
Right,
because even we still fall in that whole, the homegrown ones have, like, appeal. They... You know, you
they're
feel
the best.
For
like
them.
Disco Godfather.
Yeah.
You know, Rudy Ray Moore like is putting his heart and soul.
Yeah,
into that
movie. Yeah, heart and soul. Factory made
like
ones
Adventures
just seem
of
like,
Pluto Nash.
Yeah,
or the Avengers.
A lot of it just seem like it was just a malfunction in their machine.
This is like a
reject food item they're selling at, like, you know. Big
Lots. I mean, it really is like Steven Seagal energy drink, you know, like,
yeah,
or coconut. What, God, that looked disgusting. there's these coconut waters with like little ground up coconut in it. Anyway, that's Pluto Nash.
Pluto Dash is that weird ass coconut juice
at
that,
Big Lots. That
looks disgusting. You saw at Big Lots.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, there's the big budget filmmakers are people like Steven Sommers, you know, that go Paul W.S. Anderson, okay. And they make these kind of movies like that.
We need to wrap up, so that's it of the first episode of Late Night at the Movie Emporium.
Dude, you cut me off.
I don't care, man. I'll cut it off all the damn I want to.
I just want to say, Paul W.S. Anderson is widely considered a bad filmmaker, but Death Race was fun as hell.
But it was like watching someone play video games.
Right, but it was like watching Jason Statham play video games.
Which is good.
Which is fine.
And look out for our future episodes.
Yeah, we're going to try and... we'll let you... what's our next topic going to be?
Our next one, we're just going to... Next one's going to be a shorter... Not a two-hour, gigantically huge one. We want to start off big. So our next one's just going to be like a simple review, like two or three movies sort of thing. And, just chat for an hour sort of thing.
And then after that, we've got...
Yeah, we have a big episode coming up, all on Troma. Probably another big one. We do it with big ones occasionally like this.
Yeah, and Troma, like, and there Troma, aren't many podcasts about Troma, if any.
We looked, and I guess they're just trying to avoid Troma. I don't know why. But I think Troma is an important part of me growing up.
Right, and I was introduced to Troma recently, so...
And I think it's just something that should be addressed, and take a look out for that episode.
It's an important part of you know, the film culture, and it does
need to
be addressed.
But thanks for listening, and I'm Eli Osman.
And I'm Andrew Ford.
Late Night at the Movie Emporium.
It's well after 2 a.m. Late Night Cinema. We're going to go watch a movie.
Yeah. But, okay, but when we end with a song. This is a theme song to another bad movie. Can I Do It to Any Glasses?
Oh, fuck you.
Which, I'm not going to mention much now. Listen to the song, do a little research.
Fuck you in the face.
Movie's the greatest thing ever.
Fuck you.
Mama said she was alarmed when she caught me in the barn. Now you know she didn't come up from behind. She say,
that ain't the way I taught ya. It's a good thing that I caught ya. Don't you know if you don't stop it, you go blind.
Can I do it? Can I fiddle my twiddly day? I wanna do it till the girls start making passes. Till I need glasses, just let me be. Papa told me, man to man, you grow hair upon your hands. If you keep it up, you're gonna lose your mind.